Blog Talk Radio.
He's got a house in Miami on the water and a house in Malibu that he flies a jet to. He drives a Lamborghini, but he never gets a ticket because he parties with the mayor and he's really, really fit. With Dolce and Gabbana, and he always has his picture in some fashion magazine. He's got 1,000 bottles in his private wine collection and his own skybox at all the 49ers games. He may be rich, but he's not that rich. He don't have you. He's got a PhD in macroeconomics and a master's in philosophy from NYU. Been a Mensa member for so long he can't remember, and he often uses words with five syllables. He studies particle collisions, subatomic cell division, pre-Columbian religion, literary composition, infrared emissions, oriental superstitions, military expeditions, and the works of Van Gogh. He may be smart, but he's not that smart. Doesn't like my tie down. He's got a lot of friends with all the right connections. He never pays for tickets and he gets the best seat. He can call up any restaurant and always get a table. And if he ever needs a kidney, you can bet he won't wait. He may be cool, but he's not that cool.
For the next hour, John Talk Radio will be Jeff Talk Radio. Jeff Tobin is the lead singer and songwriter for the Columbus rock band The Jeffs. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Great to be here.
It's great to have you on. I just love that song. It's one of the songs where, you know, it's like you just start dancing really fast and round in circles, and it's just got a great beat. And how do you feel as a musician, as a songwriter, when you write a song and you play it live, Jeff, and you see the reaction of the crowd? Is that's got to be one of the greatest feelings of a musician.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what every musician wants. You want that crowd reaction, and you feed off that. It's energy. It's electricity. Yeah.
So let's just start right off. I've been doing these interviews since 2008, but I like to just kind of follow the vibe or how the interview is going to go. And I'm thinking, let's start off with the songwriting part of it. When you're writing the song like that one, the lyrics stand out. I mean, I'm listening to the lyrics. Some songs I'm not. Some songs I'm more involved in the beat or being a semi-musician myself, I might be listening to the bass or the guitar and things like that. How does Jeff Tobin work so that the lyrics have the right balance, the music has the right balance, it all works together so that you're getting, that the person that's receiving that is getting the right balance of the song that you want, that you've written?
Well, I'm really glad to hear that the lyrics stand out for you, just because I work really hard on the lyrics. It takes me a long time. Every once in a while, I'll have one of those lucky strikes where, you know, you sit down and it writes itself in 5 minutes, and you hear about that happening to songwriters. That rarely happens to me. It can take me weeks or even months to write some lyrics that I'm happy with, and I do put a lot into the lyrics because I think that's the thing that I personally can bring to the party. When I started writing songs, it's been 9-10 years now that I've actually been pursuing it on a more active basis. But when I started, I thought, you know, there's a lot of lots of people out there have better voices than I do, and there's lots of people who are better guitar players than me. But I could always write well. My background is advertising. I spent a long time working for ad agencies as a writer and a creative director, and I was always a good writer, and I could write funny stuff, and that just came easy to me. And so I thought, well, I can do that in lyrics. That's not that difficult for me. The first songs I wrote, they had that kind of quirkiness to them that people often identify our band with now. And it's just, it comes out of who I decided to be as a lyric writer. And then in terms of integrating it with the music, I don't know that there's any formal process for that. In fact, sometimes it just kind of happens. When it blends together really well, like that song does, and I'm glad to hear you like it so much. I've got a lot of positive response on that, as well as the video. But when they blend really well together, it's terrific, and happily a lot of them do. Every once in a while, I'll write a song that has a different feel in the groove, and then the lyric says something different. And I guess I was never as aware of that as I was probably 2-3 months ago. I played here in Columbus. There's the Columbus Songwriters Association, and they have these monthly showcases where a bunch of songwriters get up and perform two songs, and then people in the audience, usually non-musicians, will write down their impressions on note cards and then pass them to the musicians at the end. And, you know, so you get feedback on your songs. And this one song that I played, I was really proud of. I thought it was it actually wasn't a very quirky song. It was a pretty heartfelt song. But a couple of the comments were the song lyrics didn't match the melody and the groove of the song. And that, I guess it had never really, that never really bothered me so much, and it never occurred to me. But then I started afterwards, I started thinking, well, maybe I should pay more attention to that, which concerns me a little bit, because sometimes you don't want to overthink things either as a writer. You just have to go with what feels right. And I'm trying to balance what I do naturally with listening to people when I do get feedback. But that's really about as far as the process goes, I guess.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting, because I've asked, you know, the question about songwriting, Jeff, to a lot of songwriters, and one of the things that's always interesting to me is, like, who do you take your song to when you're writing a song? Who's the first person you go to say, hey, listen to this and tell me what you think, and why do you choose that person?
Yeah, that's – I don't know that I have a go-to person. I mean, for very often it'll be my wife, and but I know what kinds of songs she likes. And and so if the song I'm presenting her falls within that realm, I'm pretty sure I know she'll probably like it. She may have some comments on it, but if it falls outside of her realm, she's more of an acoustic picker kind of thing, you know, she's softer stuff. And so if I presented I Got You, the song you just played, to her, she would try to say, eh. and it took me a long time to realize that I can rely on her for some good, honest feedback. But, you know, she has her limitations, just like everybody does, and she has her own biases. So often I don't know that I present songs to anybody other than the band. When there's a band song, we'll be at a rehearsal. I'll say, hey, I'm working on something new. What do you guys think? And I'll look for their feedback on it. So I guess on a more regular basis, it's going to be the band that will hear it first. And they're either because they really do like what I write, or they're just very nice people. Probably both.
Yeah. I would imagine they like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Very, very rarely have they ever said, eh. However, there have been times where we will work on a new song at rehearsal, and we record every rehearsal. And so we'll work it out, and we'll get the nuts and bolts of it down at one rehearsal. And then I'll go back that night and I'll listen to what we worked on. And often I'll kill a song. I'll say, you know, this just doesn't feel right. Either it's not the right song for the band, because there are songs that are better just solo acoustic stuff, and there are songs that work well in a band setting, at least my band. And so sometimes I'll kill a song if it doesn't feel right for us, and it'll sit on the shelf for another day, you know. But and yes, occasionally I'll do open mics. I know a lot of people do. I don't do open mics as much as I used to when I was starting out, simply because of time, you know, between working on my own music and the band and having a regular job. I just don't have that many free nights anymore. But I'm this year actually is a goal of mine is to start doing more open mics, just because I do miss playing solo from time to time. I haven't done it in a couple of years, and I do miss it, so I'm going to start doing more of that, I think.
Well, one thing we want to just get out there, Jeff, is the website. It's itsthejeffs.com. Is that correct?
That is right. That is. I went for thejeffs.com, and it turns out there's a family in Utah that beat me to it.
Oh. I know there's a weird Jeff in Utah. We won't talk about – isn't there a Warren Jeffs? We won't – yeah, let's don't talk about Warren.
I don't think it's him, in fairness to Jeff. I don't think it's –
but actually, it could be because he has probably a lot of people out there. But we digress. But one thing I think is really – yeah, you could write a song about that. But don't really.
Many topics out there that it's hard to pick a topic because the world is full of them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's really cool how you do that. And, you know, one band that I have interviewed a lot, they have everybody's busy and they're all doing things. And what the lead guy will write his stuff down and then send it to everybody. And then they'll work on it, get their parts down. Then they meet like once a week and put that together. And I thought that was a pretty cool way of doing it. That way everybody was – you know, if it's a new song they're introducing, was kind of a way to get them already familiar with things before. So I think that's kind of cool. How do you think technology has helped in – I know it's can go either way. I mean, we talk about this. We debate this a lot on the show about, you know, how are things better than in the 60s and 70s when you had you know, very few songs available to people. They had to listen to the radio. They had albums. They could hold them, all this kind of stuff. Now, Jeff, you know, like there's thousands of songs that a person can listen to, and just if they don't like it, you know, I talked to a record producer once and said, you know, he gives a song 15 or 20 seconds, and then if it doesn't work, he goes to the next one. He just keeps going. It's like, what do you think of it? I know you've got the song, thank God for the internet, which we could play that, but it's, what do you think of technology? Has it helped? I know, you know, I threw a lot out there with the, you know, being able to work with your team when you're not there and, you know, your band. And also, what do you think of like the saturation of music and all of that that's going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, those are two ideas. I mean, certainly being able to exchange files online has made life a lot easier, and we do that a lot. I mean, of course, I'm pretty sure most bands have a Dropbox site where they can upload. I record a lot of demos, and I'll put our demos and rehearsals and live gigs. I'll put them all on our Dropbox site, so everybody in the band has access to it. So everybody's all up to speed on what's going on, and then if they have questions, how did, you know, like what harmony did we use here, they can just go to the Dropbox and play the file like that. So in terms of that aspect of technology, sure, it's wonderful. It's great, because as we all get older, we forget stuff, which is why I record everything, and
yep.
It makes life very easy. But in terms of distribution, my God, and that's really where that song "Thank God for the Internet" came out of, because, you know, I love technology and I hate technology, because in terms of music, you know, I mean, it's clear that what we've gained by having access to billions of songs is we've lost the filters. And whereas before, you know, back in the day, before Napster, everybody relied on record labels to filter songs and the radio stations to filter the songs. So you took other people's viewpoints of what were the great songs, and you found those stations and those labels that you liked. So you could narrow down, 50,000 songs to 100 songs, and it was just easier. That's all been blown up, and so now what we're getting back to is so it's overwhelming, the amount of music out there, and it's being recreated now with things like Spotify playlists and things like that. So again, we're creating new filters, and instead of trying to get picked up by a label, bands like us and pretty much every band would love to be on a Spotify playlist, or any playlist, any reputable playlist or blog blog mentions, just to stand out from the crowd. And so it's tough. It's really, really tough. It's probably no easier than it was back in the day, before the internet. But it's just a different world that we're living in. And I don't know if because I wasn't doing music back in the 60s and 70s and 80s and early 90s, I don't really know if this is harder now than it was. But it's like going to a restaurant with a menu that's way too big. It's just hard to figure out what to do. So thank God for the internet came out of that duality. That I love the internet and I absolutely hate the internet. And I think it's done great things for society, and it's done terrible things for society too.
Isn't it crazy? I was thinking about it, Jeff, yesterday, how that it's the biggest thing it has to be one of the biggest things in technology, or sometimes just sociologically in my life, where it has brought everything together, and like people can, they get all worked up about things, and it's like, my gosh, I don't remember that. I mean, it was probably happening, but I wasn't aware of it. Now I'm aware of it, and it's like, I don't know if I want to be, but let's play the song. Let's play Thank God for the Internet.
Sure.
One thing I'd like to say before, when we started off the show, Jeff, with I Got You, do you know a guy like that? Is there really a guy that you wrote that about, or was that just...
Oh, it's probably a lot of people who feel that they can't get the girl, that they're not good enough, that there's people out there that are better, smarter, richer than them, and, I'll never succeed, and then all of a sudden you do. And so
yeah.
Somehow it worked for me. So I think that plays to a lot of people, including me.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. I love the lyrics on that, and I think it's just like the guy that's got everything going for him. I was thinking, yeah, I know a couple of people like that. But let's play Thank God for the Internet. This is my guest tonight is Jeff Tobin, and he's with the band The Jeffs. And the website that you can go to learn about The Jeffs is know where they're going to play next, and we're going to talk about that when we come back. And also you can purchase the music, I believe, Jeff, on your website, correct?
Well, we have links to where you can purchase it, like Bandcamp,
okay.
Those kind of places, yeah.
Okay, and it's thejeffs.com. And we'll be right back after this to continue our interview with Jeff Tobin.
Everybody say thank you, D.O.D. 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 It's a gift for
I would like to welcome everyone back to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our March the 31st, 2018 episode, and our special guest is Jeff Tobin, who is the lead singer, songwriter for the Columbus rock band The Jeffs, and you can go on itsthejeffs.com, learn all about the band, follow them. Jeff, is there any projects or gigs or anything that's going on that you would like to let the listening audience know about?
Well, we're not playing quite as much this year as we have in the last couple of years, is because we played the heck out of the area last couple of years, and I was starting to get a little bit burned out. We played pretty much every bar and most of the festivals in town, and so we're just backing off just a little bit. You know, everybody in the band is in multiple bands too, and so everybody's pretty busy these days. But we've got a gig coming up. I think it's for April 27th, we're playing at the Big Room with a guy named Ruvain and Dan Height and Ron Freeman. And so we're going to be playing there. We played the Big Room quite a bit, and it's a wonderful place. We love playing the Big Room. The sound is great. The bar is great. People are nice. And then we're having a CD release party in June, the 21st. Is it the 21st? I think it is the 21st of June at Brothers Drake. We've been working on this is actually technically our first full-length release, because we've done two other releases, but they've all been EPs. So this one's going to have 11 songs on it, this new one. And it's songs that if people who've come to our shows, they've heard probably most of these songs. But I wanted to get them down on I was going to say tape, but get them down in a file somewhere. And So we've been working real hard on that, and we just finished recording last week, and so now everything's being mixed and mastered and all that good stuff. And so we're looking forward to that, and we're going to really promote the heck out of that and make it a really big show. And then we've got some applications into various festivals around the area, so we'll see what happens there this summer.
Well, that's cool. What's the date of the CD release party?
I'm going to let you know for sure. It's
I was just going to, you know, put it on my Facebook so people could go to that, because I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to go there. I've never gone there.
Oh, really? It's a one.
Yeah, Brothers
Drake is great, yeah. It's actually, I was wrong, it's Saturday, June 16th.
Okay.
And we'll be playing 9 to whenever everybody's done. We'll get some other bands on the lineup. I'm not sure who yet. And then April 27th is that gig at Big Room Bar.
Yeah, that's isn't that CD 102.5?
That is. Yeah, there? That's the upstairs room at CD 102, which is on Front Street, right off the interstate.
Well, that's cool. And Jeff, before I forget, would you like to introduce the band, the Jeffs?
I would love.
Who plays what?
I would love to. There are four of us in the band. We've got our bass player Jeff Wilcox, who Jeff and I have played together for, I think it's probably 6 years now. When I first started thinking about putting a band together, he was the first guy I talked to. He was a social friend, and I knew he played, and so I asked him if he wanted to start a band with me. And so he and I played as a duo for probably 2 years, and we played wherever we could get a gig around town, and we had a lot of fun. And we worked up all the a lot of songs that we're still playing today. And then we entered. We put Jeff and I teamed up with a couple of other folks, and we had a band that was a short-lived band. It was called Truck Stop Poets, and we entered the Columbus Songwriters. Columbus Bicentennial Song Contest. We had a song called Five Below on High Street. And we were one of the winners, which was a great honor for us, since we were brand. I was a pretty new songwriter at the time and not sure of myself, and the band was pretty new. And so I felt really proud to be included on that, in that winner's circle, along with some very talented people. And so Jeff and I have been together from the beginning. And then along the way, we've had various other players come and go, but as it is right now, our drummer, who is actually the only drummer we've had, Paige Vandiver. She plays with the Salty Caramels, if you're familiar with them, and they're a very popular band around town. And I've known the Salties for a long time. Their founder, Molly Winters, she and I go way back. And so I met Paige through them, and I asked Paige if she would be interested in joining our duo and making a full band out of it. And she said sure. And so we played as a three-piece for a while. And then we had some other people come and go. Jeff Straw, who's a very well-known keyboard player in town, and then we had a couple of guitarists, and they came and went. And then our current guitarist, Doug Hare, he's a keeper. We love playing with Doug. He's a fabulous lead guitar player. He's got kind of a he would probably kill me for describing it as a country western pick in the sound, because it's a little more elegant than that. But and not to disparage country western picking, because that's really, really hard too. But and he's not quite up to Chet Atkins in that school. But that's kind of where his sound. He's kind of a Telecaster sound. He's really good at it, and he's a super nice guy. And he lives actually just a couple blocks from me, so I see him a fair amount. And so he's been with us. So we've had this current lineup. Jeff, Paige, and Doug, and I—we've been going for about 2 years now, and it feels good. It's a great unit. Everybody gets along well. Things are easy. It's just an easy unit, and everybody has a lot of fun. Paige is a lot of fun. She's kind of a crazy, wacky girl. and she keeps things light. She keeps things light, and sometimes during rehearsal, because I guess I'm the leader, I'll get focused and serious, and I'm the band manager, and got to wear that hat and stuff, and she'll knock me down a few pegs, which I'm fine with.
So interesting. Yeah, yeah. When you talk about like the band and the synergy of the band, Jeff, and the people that getting together. I, unless you've been in a band, it's hard to explain it, what people have to do in order to actually have four or five people become one band and to have the same ideas and to be able to like it's your band, but you want them to be expressing themselves and they know that. But it's one of those things. What would you contribute? When you're in bands or in this band or any band, or the things that you look for when you're looking for people and you're thinking, oh my gosh, this person's really good, but I'm not too sure if they're going to fit what we're doing. And like you're saying with Paige, she's very good, but she's got this sense of humor and this way to relax people, which I think is like, she could be the Jeff's Ringo.
I guess you could say that.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. She, there has never been a Lennon-McCartney dynamic in our band either, where you've got egos or you've got that kind of thing going on where you need things diffused. We things are pretty easy in our band. And I think a lot of that is luck. I mean, because to be honest with you, the Jeffs, we all work very hard, and we take it very seriously. But it is a hobby band. you know, we're not in a position to tour the country. I mean, we all have jobs, and some of us have families, and so it is a glorified hobby band. So nobody goes into this thinking they're going to make a lot of money at this. We do this for fun, and so I've got a. We always looked for people to play with us who are okay with that. You know, there are some wonderful players in town, but they aren't going to do it for free. You know, they expect to be paid because they're professional musicians. So I'm looking for the that kind of musician who is a good player and who likes the material, and they're easy to get along with. And I feel incredibly, incredibly fortunate that I've met these three other folks, and it just gels that way. And you can't plan for that kind of thing. We got lucky, and so you know.
That is cool. That's really cool. Yeah. I think some people don't really realize how that there are musicians out there that make a living by playing with different bands and doing sessions and playing on recordings, and that's how they get paid, and that's how they pay their bills. And
right.
And that's how they do that. I know a guy in Chicago who was blown. His manager said, "Oh, I can get the rhythm section for Paul McCartney's band to be on your next album." The drummer and the bass, or not the bass player, that's Paul, but the guitar player. And he said, "Oh man, that's great. You know, I can't believe that." And then he saw how much it was going to cost him. And it was like, "Oh, okay. Maybe you'll pass on that one."
it occurred to me after a couple of years that you really could, if you had the budget, you could hire the best band in the world. You could hire the best players you know. Everybody's got a price. You could hire Jimmy Page to come sit in for you. Maybe not, but but you could certainly hire some incredible players.
Maybe Robert Plant. He might do it, yeah. Robert would probably do it.
But that's the thing. But it doesn't mean you'll have chemistry. And there's a difference, and I guess that comes into play more so when you're on the road. Because when you're in the studio working, you know, people come in for a session and they do their job and they work hard and then they're in and they're out. But when you're on the road with people or you're playing a lot of gigs regularly with people, chemistry is important. And I'll take a musician any day that is enjoyable to be with, that's fun to be with, that you have easy communication with, over somebody who's a stellar musician. But it's difficult. It's high maintenance. You know, it's like, you know, I think I've got a really good balance in this band of good musicians who are just easy to be with, and that's I don't take that for granted. I feel very lucky in that way.
My guest is Jeff Tobin, and he's with the band The Jeffs, and the website is itsthejeffs.com. Let's play "I See Magic." This song has got such a great message to it. Would you like to talk about that and talk about how that came and how you wrote that, Jeff? Because it's a pretty cool song.
Yeah, this was I get a lot of positive response on this song, and I'm very proud of this song. It actually, I had read. Are you familiar with Carlos Castaneda? He's a writer. He wrote a series of books that were popular in the 70s, I believe. There's a lot of psychedelia involved in it.
I worked with a guy, Jeff, that was a huge fan. He read all that stuff, and he told me about it. And he was – is it – I don't think I'm saying this correctly. Astral projection, is that a part of it? Was that
– Astral projection, yeah. Yeah. I think that is the right term, I think. Yeah. Well, and, you know, so, I mean, the whole story is all about these mystics who lived in the desert Southwest and this – and the hero of the stories, he's becoming a magician, and it involves a lot of psilocybin magic mushrooms, and so it's very very spacey stuff, you know. But you know, when you're at a certain age, it was really cool, and I digested those books, but they always had an impact on me, in part because the series takes place in the desert Southwest, and because the hero he's working with this Indian, this old, I forget what tribe he was part of, but it's very descriptive of the desert Southwest, and I was living in Utah in Salt Lake for a while, And I spent a lot of time down in the desert Southwest, and it is very mystical and very magical and a little surreal at times. And if you've never been out there, it's hard to understand that, but it's a really cool place. And so my wife and I would go camping a lot, and we spent a lot of time down there. And so that was in the back of my mind when I started working on this song, and it came together fairly quickly. Strangely, though, I think I wrote it in Puerto Rico.
Oh, wow.
I seem to my in-laws live in Puerto Rico, and we go down there fairly often. And I seem to remember sitting on the beach with a notepad writing a lot of these lyrics about the desert Southwest. But the story itself has that kind of impact. I mean, it is surreal and a little spacey, and the idea of a talking armadillo, under the right influence, could happen. So I think that all kind of played into it.
And by you saying that made me think of this guy. God love him. His name is Tommy Thompson, and he's passed away now. But I'm not making this up, and I don't think I've ever said this on the show before, but he would come to work, and he would say, "Man, I'm so tired." And I said, "Well, what's wrong, Tommy?" He goes, "Well, I was partying in Paris last night with Jim Morrison." And I'd say, "Oh." Yeah, he said, I would go into this place and I would throw my being and it would land in a place and there I was. And he was into that. He would talk about that. And it made me kind of think about him in a really good way, Jeff, because I hadn't thought about him in a while. And he was such a guy. I mean, wow. I mean, instead of people just talking about the ball game, that happened the night before, me and Tommy would talk about a lot of interesting things. But let's play the song.
Sure.
This is the Jeff's I See Magic, and we'll be right back with Jeff Tobin.
I was driving west through Texas on a bright spring day. My Buick lumbering slowly down the highway, when suddenly I spied an armadillo sitting on a rock, wearing a tiny cowboy hat. So I stopped the car and wandered over, and the armadillo said, "How do you do?" "Well, I'm fine, and may I say I truly admire your tiny cowboy hat." "Why, thank you," said the armadillo, "and I quite like your shiny snakeskin boots." We conversed for an hour or so until I finally had to bid adieu. With a tiny cowboy hat and him with shiny snakeskin boots. I've seen the ocean glow, I've seen the night skies all ablaze, and I see magic everywhere. Jackie hit me with an empty bottle of 18-year-old whiskey on the head. I said, "What'd you do that for?" She said, "I only wanted to see if you were dead." Well, I didn't want to give her the satisfaction of knowing she was right. So I loaded up the Buick and drove away into the starry night. Later I saw Jackie on the highway. I said, "Do you need a ride?" She turned her gaze towards me, and with the eyes of a child she started to cry. I've seen the fall and rise, I've seen the seeds of that divine, and I see magic everywhere.
desert when the air is still and shadows paint the land. I can see my spirit in the rocks and saguaros and sand. There's something in these people and these canyons that always set me free. But the more I try to understand and comprehend, the less I see. I've walked the fabled steps. I've peered into the blinding sun. And I see magic, magic everywhere. I see magic everywhere. I see magic everywhere.
And we're back on John Talk Radio. My special guest tonight is Jeff Tobin. And
hi,
Jeff,
John.
Is with the band. Hi, Jeff. And what we would like to talk about a little bit now, we got just less than 20 minutes left in our conversation. Can you tell us about when you, like, Jeff Tobin growing up and the environment you grew up in and how that music influenced you and how you got involved in music? I think it's one of the most important things when we talk to musicians is how art has a place in people's lives that is just amazing. And I hate it when schools cut art and music and things like that, because I think it's so important. So if you could walk us through, Jeff, how you, you know, growing up and how music had an influence on you.
I grew up in Tampa, Florida, I don't know that our family was particularly, well, we weren't musical. My parents weren't, and my grandfather was, but I can't say that I was a big part of the family. He just happened to be a pretty good piano player, and my uncle was a decent piano player too. But I don't know that it influenced me so much. To be honest with you, it was the Beatles, you know, and I know this is a cliche because everybody says, oh, the Beatles got me going. And like a billion other musicians, that happened with me, too. I'm old enough to have remembered seeing them on Ed Sullivan when I was a kid. And,
right.
You know, it was like it was a watershed moment. And you go, holy cow, I want to do that. And so.
Right. Yeah.
Taking guitar lessons just like a billion other kids did. And so, you know, and I joined the neighborhood bands and we were playing wherever local high school. And I don't think we were particularly good, but we were good enough to get gigs at parties and stuff like that. And I was a bass player, which was fun. I liked playing bass and I was a pretty good bass player. And I did that intentionally because everybody was a guitar player. And I thought, well, I'll have more opportunity as a bass player, and I did. And so I played with a bunch of friends, and we played those kind of gigs. And then I remember once there was some small label from somewhere that was in town looking for new artists, and we went and showed a demo that we had done, and the guy with the label said, yeah, it's okay. You guys have a way to go. But that's really good bass playing.
Oh, wow.
And I was like,
that's gotta feel good.
14 or 15 at the time. I remember thinking, yeah. But, you know, so I played in bands really all through college. Actually, it's not true. Through early college. We were playing. I joined a couple different bands, and we played some local bars around Tampa. And to be honest, and they were cover bands. Nobody was writing in the circle that I hung out with. I don't even think I thought about writing music back then. And the people I was with didn't either. We were all playing, you know, the hits of the day, you know, and the cover songs.
Right.
And I got burned out. I just started to dislike music because we're hanging out in these bars. And this is what, my freshman year, I guess. And I liked music, but I didn't like playing music anymore because we're hanging out in these bars with they're ugly bars and they were ugly people and a lot of drunks and fights and stuff like this. And I thought, this is not fun for me. I'm just not enjoying it. And so I quit music for a long time, and not only playing, but I kind of lost interest in music for a long time. And there was a long period where, you know, I was aware of bands, but I wasn't actively engaged in it. And I focused on my career, which was advertising. I worked for ad agencies, and I did that for a long time. And only got back into it after I worked in advertising for close to 30 years. And I started that again because I thought I was becoming one-dimensional. You know, I liked advertising a lot, but I thought there's got to be more to life than this. And so when we moved to Columbus, we had been living in South Carolina, and I worked for an agency down there. And when I got a job up here at an agency, I just started messing around with the guitar. And because I had worked in advertising for so long, I knew how to create. I had gotten over the fear of creating because I made commercials and ads and stuff like this, and so I knew how to look at a blank piece of paper and create something, and I was good at that. And so I basically applied that same skill to writing a song. And I wasn't a very good guitarist, but I was good enough to start writing songs, and so that started that. But so, I mean, really, so rock and roll saved my life, you know.
You know, I've talked to so many people, Jeff, that have said this. There's quite a few that I've talked to that have been in bands that have been pretty successful. They got to a point, like you said, where they just stopped doing it. And Frank Sesage is a guy that was in the Deadbeat Poets. He's in the Deadbeat Poets now. He was in, I don't know if you've ever heard of Stiff Bader's. It was a punk rock band in Cleveland, Ohio that made it big, and he was in these bands, and he said the same thing. He had played music, and he'd been in all these bands, and he had just given his life and his soul to it. And there was just a day where he wouldn't tell me what it was, but he said that was it. I was done. Put the guitar down, went on, had a family, had a life. Everything was good, and I didn't even think that was ever going to be a part of me again. And then it was close to 25 or 30 years later that Frank told me that he walked by his guitar, was sitting there all these years, and he just one day said, yeah, that feels good. And he went over. He was an incredible songwriter. I mean, so when you weren't playing music, and I know you had a way to – your outlet was in advertising and creating ads and things like that. But was there always music going on in your head and your life? I mean, was it always a part of you? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And no, I think because I had burned out of it, and it all of a sudden, music equaled a bad experience and a bad feeling in me. And it's not, and it wasn't fair now that I look back on it, because playing bars is what turned me against music. It wasn't necessarily the music itself, but I equated the whole thing with music. And so, and then listen, if I had not traded in music for advertising and really loved being in advertising, had a lot of fun, it was very creatively satisfying. If I hadn't discovered that, I might've got back into it sooner. But so I replaced music with something else that I loved equally.
Right.
And actually, advertising after a long time, putting up with a lot of corporate bullshit. Whoops, sorry. I don't know if I can say that. But putting up with a lot the same thing happened there. It's like I reached a point where I can't do this anymore. And that's all of a sudden now music is back in my life again. And a different way. And it's because we're creating. You know, I'm writing and doing that. I don't know that I could play in a cover band again. I don't think, and I don't have any interest in doing that, to be honest with you. It is this whole project, this whole endeavor is more about creating something from scratch for me.
Yeah.
So
Well, that makes perfect sense to me, because that's one of the things that we've been working with my in the last, I don't know, couple of years. My wife, my daughter is a social worker, and I've worked with people that, you know, talk about kids that are having trouble and problems. And once they start creating things, whether it's art, and you know this, music or things like that, then it just changes them. It's yeah. like it gives them this confidence and finding that right thing for them to do. It can be music. It could be poetry. It could be all kinds of things. But I just think, yeah, I do totally agree with you. I remember when I played a little bit back in the day, I was telling one of my kids about this not too long ago. I was playing in a band. This guy called me and said, hey, we're going to play on the west side of Columbus. I don't know if you know too much about the west side, but a little on the rough. There's parts of it that's a little rough. We played in this place called the Pit Stop, and I don't know if it's still there or not. It might be around Demarest Road. And we went in, and I said, oh, man, there's like all these hubcaps and wheel covers and everything all over the walls. And he said, yeah, and the next time you come in, yours will be up there. And yep. I thought, oh, that's so funny, because they would go out in the parking lot, take everybody's hubcaps and stuff on and nail them onto the wall. And I thought, there was something cool about that. It was, I don't know, I just, it is a whole different world. You kind of have to. And our guitar player got his guitar stolen that night, the Stratocaster. Oh. It was just,
oh,
yeah, it was a rough night. Losing your hubcaps and your guitar and the whole thing. But Jeff, it's been so much fun talking to you. I really appreciate you taking the time to be on. I think your music is amazing. I definitely want to come to one of these gigs you're playing, the one in June 16th at Brothers Drake, and the one at the Big Room on April 27th. I want to come to one of those, so I want to definitely hear the band live. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing, Jeff, that I didn't talk about, or anything you would like to talk about the band or your music?
I don't, you know, nothing in particular. I mean, I'm really appreciative of the music community in Columbus. I think I got very lucky in that I moved to a city, and I've only been here for about 12, 13 years, so I don't have a lot of the music depth that some of the folks around here do. Like, remember this band in the 90s? No, I don't. I wasn't living here then. But I just feel I lucked into a situation here where it's a great music community. There's a lot of good players, and there are places to play. And not every city has that. A lot of cities, I've lived in a lot of places in the country, and a lot of places don't have that. And so I feel really lucky that this is a great nurturing environment for music, and you just have to find your circle, your peeps to hang out with and grow in that way. And there's a lot of groups out there. There's a lot of circles out there that you can jump into and start to grow as a musician. So I feel lucky in a lot of ways with music, and that's one as well, you know. So I encourage anybody else anybody else who has an interest in music to just dive into it, you know. I mean, and that's actually the one great thing about the internet is you can find out a lot. You can find out a lot about what's going on with music and different music organizations, and as I mentioned before, the Columbus Songwriters Association is a terrific organization. There's others around too, but you can find all that stuff in this city, and then just go and become a regular. And even if you don't have experience, the people, if you're nice and you're not a jerk, but if you're a nice person and you show interest, they'll bring you along and you'll become better. But you got to put yourself out there and make it happen. It's not going to happen to anybody sitting in their house. So, which was my story. I got started really with bands in Columbus by just going and meeting people, and you don't have to be obnoxious. I was just a nice guy, I guess, and you know, start hanging out with musicians who helped bring me along. So anybody can do it. It's all out there.
It's really great also, because in Columbus, I'll talk to different groups, and there's all these different little pockets of musicians, and a lot of times they won't know each other, but they're really good. There's like jazz groups, and there's heavy metal groups, and there's the alternate rock groups, and like you said, the folk groups. There's just a lot of things going on. I love the Columbus music scene. So, Jeff, thank you so much. And
thank you, John.
I wish you the best. And for everyone that's interested in the music of the Jeffs, go to itsthejeffs.com and check them out. And Jeff, have a great evening. We'll talk to you later. And we appreciate everybody supporting independent musicians. And we just thank everybody and have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
I would gladly steal her heart. You can forget.